Okay, before we have our quiet time, let's all get on the same page. If you're in the Sparkly Book, it's page 327, the last paragraph. If you're in the second edition, it's page 282, paragraph 2. If you're in the first edition, it's page 262, the second full paragraph. And if you're reading from the JCIM, it's page 137, the sixth paragraph. Okay. Let's take a few moments to be quiet together. Okay. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. Well, you've had 2 weeks to practice. It was an opportunity for learning. Learning meaning to move you into greater clarity so that you're able to be on the beam or on target better. The target not being, of course, a carrot that you're going to aim for, but the target being a silent mind, where no static is present, interfering with your ability to be fully present with whatever is going on. With a capacity to respond to it with love. Because in the silence, you are desiring to know what love looks like. Because you want to be the evidence of love, and because you want to see the evidence of love. It's very simple. You are not here to live a lifetime. In preparation for another lifetime. This is not a dress rehearsal for really living. This is not a dress rehearsal for really being. What this is, that you call life, is you being the ultimate. You being maximally. But only paying attention to the teeniest, teensiest bit of it, and choosing to ignore the rest or distract yourself from the rest by a process called thinking. If you want to have a description of why you're here to wake up. You're here For the last incarnation, if you will. You're here for the last attempt to function from second gear. You're here for the last residential class in the orphanage on how to be an orphan who becomes a real, finally becomes a real boy or a real girl. You're here to be healed of ignorance, and you're here to be the presence of that which heals ignorance in your relationship with each other. As we go into the book, it begins by saying, each one of you has a special part to play in the atonement. Each one of you. And I'm going to broaden it a little bit so it doesn't sound like I'm speaking down to you. Each one of us has a special part to play in the atonement. Each one of us has a gift to give. And the gift that each of us has to give, and I mean by that it's a gift that each one of us already has, each one of you already has, so it's not a gift you have to earn the capacity to give, and it's not a skill that you have to acquire. It's something already present in you. The gift that each of us has to give is the willingness to hold our brother up to the Father, if you will, to present our brother or sister to our Father in an act of honoring what is true about them. I promise you, you can't do that when you're thinking. Because thinking, as I've said before, is always an act of self-preservation, engaged in because there is an underlying fundamental belief that you are not valid, that you are not actual, but you can become actualized, that you are potentially divine but not divine yet, and therefore anything you do that embodies acts of thinking are all about you and not about your brother. They're all about you and they're not about creation, the kingdom of heaven that is confronting you. And so healing cannot occur and your function is not fulfilled. Now again, each one of you has a special part to play in the atonement. But the message given to each to share is always the same. God's Son is guiltless. Now, you can, each one of you can, approach your brother or embrace your brother intellectually And by virtue of using really good choices of words, attempt to convey to them the fact that they are guiltless. You can, by a good choice of words, inspire them to have faith that they are guiltless, and that as a result they can dare to behave in the world without fear. Where their actions are not based on self-preservation. But you know what? That isn't what will convey to them that they are guiltless. What will convey to them that they are guiltless is, as you present to them, like I am presenting to you, that there's a way of thinking that they are engaging in, called an orphan mindset, called second gear. And that as long as they're in second gear, third gear is going to accompany them. Not because it's real, not because the guilt and fear that are third gear have presence and power that can hold them hostage, but that they are necessary accompaniments to a belief that isn't true. That belief being that they have a mind of their own, and the way it functions and accomplishes things is through thinking. How do you show a brother that he's guiltless? You show a brother that he's guiltless by talking to the Holy One that he is, the Holy One that you are able to see because you have abandoned second gear yourself. You are no longer opting for the right to behave as though you are an orphan. And your only goal, instead of self-preservation, is to hold that brother up, to lift that brother up as a gift to the Father by your acknowledgement of what is divinely true about him. And letting that vision, I'm not going to say holding that vision, letting that vision abide with you without distracting yourself from it by any method of thought power. Now, you may have found it difficult over the past 2 weeks in doing the practice. Perhaps you got pretty good at hesitating and noticing what was going on, not out there, but in your own mind, and what the nature and character of the flow of thoughts was. But then you may have been confronted by something unexpected. Something that threw you off balance, something that you felt required you to reconnoiter. Look at everything again to get your balance and to get control back. And, of course, the way you reconnoiter is by thinking everything through so that you're sure you're not missing a thing, you're not neglecting anything as you adjust to the new circumstances, whether the new circumstances are unexpected good or whether the unexpected circumstances are negative. If something really good happened, or if something apparently really negative happened, you might have found that it took you 3 or 4 or 5 days or even a week before you even realized that you had stopped paying attention to what was going on in your mind and noticing that you were trying to cope with the good, the excessive good or the excessive bad, through thinking. Those are the times especially where it is valuable to step back. Notice what you're thinking, and then say, but my mind is part of God's. I am very holy. Now, under these circumstances that I've described, making that statement might seem like holding a cross up to a vampire, a nice platitude to throw out in the face of whatever is disturbing, not something that you actually believe or feel, but a good, strong statement. My mind is part of God's. With your cross out. My mind is part of God's, and I am very holy. And the statement is itself a defense, which is an attack, not an acknowledgement of any sort. It can become easy to forget that the reason for making the statement is to remind yourself that it's not natural for you not to be connected with your Father and operate from an artificial place called second gear, where you are using a mind that you think you have all by yourself in order to cope and survive and succeed. It's not natural. And so when you say, my mind is part of God's, you're reminding yourself that your mind is not part of an orphan mindset. Your mind is not an independent thing that belongs only to you, and that you, through the skillful use of your mind, can deal with problems well, or through the poor use of your mind, can suffer from problems. That's not what your mind is. And that's not where you are. Your mind is part of God's. First gear. It's a reminder that you're not supposed to take seriously the suggestion that you're on your own and you can work things out all by yourself, and in fact, you have to work things out all by yourself. My mind is part of God's. I exist in a different context than the one I was operating from, out of fear and with guilt. You see? Now, I want to point something else out. There is someone holding you up. There is someone holding you up to the Father and presenting you to the Father, acknowledging the truth about you constantly, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, unvaryingly. It's the Holy Spirit, that which is nothing more than your right mind. Your connection with your Father has never been broken, because that part of you which you're not paying any attention to at the moment continues to present you to the Father truthfully. And you could say that in so doing, the Father never loses touch with you. and I hold you up, every single one of you. And those who are awake hold those up who are assigned to them. You must remember this. You're bound to wake up. If you got discouraged during the past 2 weeks, I'm telling you, persist. I'm telling you that your discouragement comes from still identifying with the orphanage, still identifying with second gear, still identifying with the belief that you, through the proper use of your mind, can make things all right. And when you're doing that, you are saying that all of this help, all of this support that is being provided to you doesn't exist. At least you're going to ignore it because you choose to do things by yourself. Nevertheless, the love you are embraced with, and the love with which what is true about you is held up to the Father, is enormous. And I encourage you, I invite you, I ask you to invite it in, whether you're discouraged or not. Just because I gave you the practice for 2 weeks doesn't mean to stop now. You really do want to arrive at the point where you are in your relationships with your brothers and sisters desiring more than anything else to hold what is true about them up to the Father, presenting to the Father with all honor and respect this guiltless brother or sister, in acknowledgement of what is true of them, even if they're not believing it at the moment. That is the gift you have to give. That is the part you play in the atonement. Again, each one of you has a special part to play in the atonement. But the message given to each to share is always the same. God's Son is guiltless. Each one teaches the message differently and learns it differently. Yet until he teaches it and learns it, he will suffer the pain of dim awareness that his true function remains unfulfilled in him. The burden of guilt, no matter how it's labeled, the burden of guilt is heavy. But God would not have you bound by it. It's not part of His plan. His plan for your awaking is as perfect as yours is fallible. Now we've talked about how it's fallible, and so we're not going to go further into that at the moment. The point is that His plan for your awaking is as perfect as yours is fallible. You know not what you do, but He who knows is with you. He who knows. Times three. He who knows the Father is with you. He who knows, the Holy Spirit, is with you. He who is awake is with you. I'm with you. You know not what you do, but he who knows is with you. It may not feel at all natural for you to go through your day or days doing this practice, because to you it seems so irrelevant to the actualities of your day and what everyone is presenting you with. It doesn't matter whether it doesn't feel natural. What it means is that it's just not part of the culture that you live in. That's all. Culture is not fact. It's a mutually agreed upon definition or definitions and behaviors. You're here to establish a new culture. And amazingly, you're here to establish a culture of what? Love. Isn't that amazing? So, if it doesn't feel natural to you to remind yourself that you're not here to think, but that in the silence you are here to be able to recognize the truth and act out from that truth that you've recognized, You're here to be the presence of love, persistently enough and consistently enough for a new manifestation of loveliness in your relationships and in your world to manifest, so that there is greater justification for everyone joining in the establishment of a new culture. A culture not based upon fear and hate. A culture not based upon self-protection, but rather a culture based on the extension of the acknowledgement of the guiltlessness of your brother, the holiness of your brother, which you're engaging in because you're holding your brother up to God in full acknowledgement and honoring of what is real and true about him. You see? Well, you say, well, cultures are sluggish. They change very slowly. But I promise you, cultures change in a flash when everyone is fed up with what isn't working. So don't labor under a projected idea of difficulty that is confronting you that will make it totally unreasonable for you to engage in an act that is discouraging because it's not received quickly. You know not what to do, but he who knows is with you. His gentleness is yours. His gentleness is yours. Of course it is. The Father's gentleness is present in his son or daughter. The gentleness of sons or daughters who are not estranged from their father is extended to you likewise. His gentleness is yours. It's yours as well. And it's extended to you. Because in actuality, you don't really have any other option. You don't really have the option to hate. You don't really have the option to instill guilt. You imagine that you do, and you go around implementing your imagination and accomplishing nothing. I know. It doesn't seem that way to you. You think you're really accomplishing something. But that's part of the culture, that you're here to change by virtue of doing something new with your mind. Listening instead of thinking. Being receptive instead of being proactively noisy, to the exclusion of being able to hear what fits into a creation that is already in perfect harmony. I want you to contemplate this. If creation is infinite, and if creation actually were flawed, creation would instantly end catastrophically. Because infinite conflict constitutes instantaneous non-existence. Instantaneous total destruction. If you are experiencing existence in any way, shape, or form right now, whether it seems to be suffering, a suffering experience or not, you may know that you are in a universe, a movement of creation that is absolutely unflawed. Be with that. Stay with that. Because it will help you to deny or disregard the suggestions that you are in a conflicted universe, a polarized universe, one in which life and death exist side by side, two forces that work equally and have their successes and failures. You have to have some means to challenge the feeling that you can't be an agent for the change of cultures. You know not what you do, but he who knows is with you. His gentleness is yours. And all the love you share with God, he holds in trust for you. He would teach you nothing except how to be happy. He would teach you nothing except how to be happy. Now, this is for balance, because I know that those of you who engaged in the practice I gave you for the last 2 weeks did not come out with an entirely positive resulting attitude or feeling about it. Because the culture of orphanhood that you were coming out of, or that you are coming out of, is so strong at the moment. Listen. blessed son, blessed daughter, of a holy, blessing Father, joy was created for you. Oh, but that's not part of your culture, is it? Blessed son of a holy, blessing Father, joy was created for you. Not for someone else, not for another time, not for the sweet by and by after you die. It was created for you. Well, you are here, aren't you? You are now, aren't you? You are present, aren't you? Well, that which is here, now, present, joy, was created for you. Embrace that as part of the new culture in your mind. Joy was created for you. Well, why? I mean, you can say, oh, that's nice. Joy was created for me. And you can just think of joy as a commodity or as a, well, there's some joy here and there's some joy there. I'm going to pick a bundle of joy here and put it in my suitcase and a little more joy over here. And I anticipate some joy tomorrow. And no, we're not talking about that kind of joy. The joy that was created for you is a joy that's connected to something. The joy that was created for you is connected to the love, the active love, the active conscious love expressed by the Father for His creation. You see? An orphan could go around and collect little experiences of joy and build up a large suitcase full of joy that had been acquired, this loose, floating around sort of joy that's not connected to anything. But real joy was created for you by whom? Your Father. Ah. I'm not an orphan. You're not an orphan. That's what it means. Joy was created for you by that which proves that you're not an orphan. And you're not in a state of loss in which you can move around and collect bits of good and bits of joy and collect them and save them up and hoard them and perhaps someday be wealthy with joy. You see, a wealth that doesn't represent a birthright, right? It's a wealth that speaks of your ability to hoard well. But the joy that we're talking about is a gift from your Father. And included in the gift is the remembrance of who you are, which is the direct expression of God. And therefore, you have a birthright that is constituted of all that the Father expresses of Himself in every part of creation. It is an act of love that constitutes you and embraces you. Blessed Son of a holy, blessing Father, joy was created for you. Again, embrace this. It's part of the new culture. It's part of the only culture. Who can condemn whom God has blessed? And I would ask, who would? Only an orphan who doesn't know there is a God and doesn't know that his human brother is the offspring of the same parent, God, and therefore is more interested in protecting himself against his brother than holding his brother up in acknowledgement of what is true about him to their mutual father, in honor of the Father's creation right there. There is nothing in the mind of God that does not share his shining innocence. Creation is the natural extension of perfect purity. Again, such meanings are not part of the culture that you live in. But it is the culture of your being. No matter where you are listening to this, no matter what country you're in, the culture of love needs to be illuminated, expressed, embodied, actualized, if you will. That's the gift you have to give. Each one of you has a special part to play in the atonement. You see, there's nothing frivolous about your being here. It's not just another lifetime. It's not a fluke of physical life where a sperm and an egg happened randomly by chance to join and create this incredibly individuality that you are, who exists whether you believe in God or not, whether there is a God or not. No. You have a role to play, a special part to play in the atonement. But the message given to each to share is always the same. God's Son is guiltless. That's your gift. That's the incredible meaningfulness, the incredible meaningfulness of your presence. And you won't get any gold stars for this, but you will get your right mind back. You will get your sanity back. In which this culture that we're talking about, which seems so strange, will be seen as utterly normal, natural. Again, creation is the natural extension of perfect purity. Your only calling here is to devote yourself with active willingness to the denial of guilt in all its forms. How do you engage in the denial of guilt? by holding up that which would be called guilty with the specific goal of acknowledging that one's guiltlessness. Acknowledging that one's guiltlessness to your common Father, which identifies the one you're holding up and you and the Father as family, as one, as absolutely, I'm going to say bound by, circumscribed by. The capital B birthright that comes from God. You're bound by it. You're bound to it. It is bound to you. It can't be lost. You can't mislay it. You might choose not to pay any attention to it, but it's inescapable. Your only calling here is to devote yourself with active willingness to the denial of guilt in all its forms. To accuse, to make guilty, is not to understand. The happy learners of the atonement become the teachers of the innocence that is the right of all that God created. Hear that? The happy learners of the atonement become the teachers of the innocence that is the right of all that God created. You teach your brother his innocence. How? By ramming it down his throat? No, by lifting him up to the Father and acknowledging to the Father. So that family is embraced, not that which could end up being a brotherly squabble. You see? Don't try to cram your brother's innocence down his throat. Stand with your brother and talk to your Father. And acknowledge to your Father what is true about your brother or sister. Now, the interesting thing is that at the moment, because of the culture you are acclimated to, you don't know what the truth is about your brother so that you might lift him up to the Father in acknowledgement of it. And so you must do this practice of stepping back to notice what's going on in your mind and then saying, but this thinking and static and everything that's going on is not in any way the truth about me. My mind is part of God's. Now we're shifting gears. And I am very holy. Now, if you're doing the practice correctly, you've stopped thinking and there is some silence. Because you don't want to energize that which isn't true about you and that which evokes a misperception of who and what you are. And now you're joined with the Father with your attention on Him and a desire to know what the truth about your brother is. Or you can ask me, or you can ask your guide. But the point is you've got to ask so that the Father or the Holy Spirit or me can answer you and reveal to you the truth about your brother so that then you may lift it up to the Father. The the simple fact is that you've got to stop being blocked by whatever ugly or ignorant presentation your brother is making of himself toward you, or whatever negative picture you are holding about him, because you know that holding on to either one of those is going to keep you in the realm of self-protection, which is thinking, and which is inseparable from the experience of guilt and fear. And this is the gift you're here to make. To care more about knowing the truth about your brother than the belief you're holding about him or the beliefs he's holding about himself. Your only calling here, not complicated, not 10,000 things to do, your only calling here is to devote yourself with active willingness to the denial of guilt in all its forms. Continuing further, the happy learners of the atonement, those who aren't whining too much about how hard it is to escape the culture you're coming out of, but who really desire to have a new experience. The happy learners of the atonement, become the teachers of the innocence that is the right of all that God created. Or we could say the birthright of all that God created. Deny them not what is their due, for you will not withhold it from them alone. The inheritance, here it is, the birthright, the inheritance of the kingdom is the right of God's Son, given him in his creation. The Father withheld nothing of what he was in the creation of every aspect of creation, including you. The inheritance of the kingdom is the right, the birthright, of God's Son, given him in his creation. Do not try to steal it from him, or you will ask for guilt and will experience it. You will ask for guilt, and you will experience it. That's your prize. That's what you get for operating from second gear. But protect his purity from every thought that would steal it away and keep it from his sight. Bring innocence to light in answer to the call of the atonement. Never allow purity to remain hidden, but shine away the heavy veils of guilt within which, what, the Son of God has hidden himself from his own sight. Never allow purity to remain hidden. There's two aspects to that. Your brother can approach you and behave in a way that discloses an absence of his purity. Don't let him succeed at it. Don't let him successfully hide it. But also, don't block your perception of it because you're too busy or you're better than he is or he has done you wrong. Don't justify covering up his purity yourself. Never allow purity to remain hidden. That's part of the new culture. That's part of the culture of reality. That's part of the culture that will illuminate reality as you take the time and the courage and the intent to bring it forth. We are all joined in the atonement here. And nothing else can unite us in this world. See how simple? We are all joined in the atonement here. As I said, although the book says each one of you has a special part to play in the atonement, each one of us has a special part to play in the atonement. We are all joined. Every son or daughter of God, awake or not, we are all joined in the atonement here. There's no other action. There's no other movement of any actuality occurring except the movement of atonement. That's why each one of you has a special part, a special part to play. That's why each one of you is far from meaningless. We are all joined in the atonement here, and nothing else can unite us in this world. There aren't 5,000 other things that can be done to unite us in this world. Just the one thing. So will the world of separation, the orphanage, slip away, and full communication be restored between the Father and the Son. How? By talking to God? No. By making the gift to your brother of holding him up to the Father in acknowledgement of and honor of that which is absolutely true of him and of his guiltlessness. So will the world of separation slip away and full communication be restored between the Father and the Son. Through the re-establishment in love of the whole and wholeness of family. Let me end with something real simple. If accident or disease or anything seems to have put you in a position of agony and suffering and threat of death, you do not deserve it. It is not your birthright to acquiesce to it. And although you might be able to say, here's the way I created this for myself, and blame yourself, the fact is that you don't deserve it, and it's not even actual. If God did not create it, it hasn't happened. And it's an illusion for you to become free of. If, at this moment, any of you are experiencing agony or suffering of the sort I've mentioned, you know that you want to be free of it, and you know that you deserve to be free of it. And that you are not required to suffer through the end of whatever learning might need to occur, that there is no justification for another moment of suffering. Now, I am telling you that that is correct, and I am acknowledging the truth about you to you, and I am at the same time lifting you up to the Father in my acknowledgement of the truth of you, and you are blessed, and you deserve it. And I will tell you this, your brother deserves the very same thing from you. At every moment, so in the clarity of knowing that you deserve to be free of suffering that is an illegitimate imposition upon a child of God, you have the feeling capacity to recognize the utter appropriateness of your extending that very same thing to your brother, no matter what you thought before I said this about your brother, and no matter what your brother is thinking about himself. So will the world of separation slip away and full communication be restored between the Father and the Son. Backing up to the previous page to end, communication with God is life. I love you to God. I love you right up to the Father. And complete the connection between you and the Father by keeping it alive in my mind until you are able to keep it alive in yours. And it is done. And I look forward to being with you next week.